Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to this live expert panel hosted by Scrappy ABM. This is your host, Mason Cosby, founder over here, and I'm incredibly excited. I joined together some of the, I think, brightest people when it comes to sales and marketing alignment, and then also specifically attribution. When we look at why ABM programs fail, it comes down to like measurement and alignment. So we've got sales on the call, we've got ops on the call, we've got leadership on the call. So I'm super stoked. I hope that there's a couple of fights and disagreements because this is where we're going to go ahead and get into some controversy. We titled this "It's All Your Fault" as a synopsis of, I think that the sales and marketing argument typically points fingers at each other versus ourselves. And what I have found is that when it's something else is someone else's fault, that functionally means that I can't do anything about it. And as a result, I should throw up my hands and say, guess I'm screwed and I can't do my job, which like very defeatist mindset. Versus if it's our fault, means it's within our control to change. So the goal here is to actually talk through sales and marketing alignment and attribution challenges and actually look at what can we functionally own in our organization today that will then help to facilitate change. So if you're excited for that conversation, that's what we're digging into today. I'm joined by a wonderful panel of lovely ladies that are experts in their craft. So I'm going to go first to Sarah. Sarah, can you do an intro and then pass it?
Absolutely. Very excited to be here and excited for even like the pre-calls ahead of this where it's so cool just to hear the different perspectives. So I'm Sarah Segal. I am Director of Growth Marketing at Open Sesame. If you're not familiar with Open Sesame, we're an e-learning platform. So really focused on corporate skills development, career growth, all that good stuff. I have been in marketing and go-to-market overall for a little over a decade. Actually started in sales, so I feel like I have a little bit of a extra sense of empathy and perspective on the sales and marketing alignment because I'm like, oh, I've been there in those shoes. So excited to get to kick it off and have this discussion. Laura, I will pass it over to you.
My name is Laura Erdem, and I'm joining you from Dream Data's office in New York. I'm the director of our US sales, and I've been in sales all my life. But nowadays, when people see my content on LinkedIn once in a while, they do mix it up and say, so like, how come you're not in marketing? So sales and marketing alignment is very close to my heart because we speak with marketers every single day. We understand what types of problems they're working with. The good thing is when I'm in sales, I know how sales operate and where do they start pointing freaking fingers and where they're not supposed to do that either. So I'm very excited for this conversation. And Kaysen, over to you.
Perfect. Thank you. So I'm Kaysen Gorenson. I'm really focused on account-based marketing and demand gen currently at BetterUp. I think I'm excited about this conversation. Similar to Sarah, I have managed BDR and SDR teams in the past, but I've also been in ops. So I have some sympathy for some of the other sides, but really see how everyone could work together, even though, yeah, we like to fight and we like to place blame.
Thank you all for being here. For those of you that don't know, Mason Cosby, founder of Scrappy ABM, and we help build marketing and sales programs. So in short, we help all of these teams and we see a lot of the fighting. And it's always interesting to just look first at the team dynamic of who's actually in. So before we dig into the conversation, I'm curious from all of you, like, what is the current team size and configuration across marketing, sales, and business development within the teams that you currently serve on? So, or I'll ask you first.
So we are very fortunate that Dream Data's co-founder is a CMO. He's running the marketing department. And when saying running the marketing department, he's running it very smartly. He's still the person who does performance marketing as well. So we've got a CMO and a couple of people running product marketing and our content marketing. Everything else is done through Dream Data and one partnership agency that we have to work with. So it's a very, very small team comparing to how mighty the sales are at Dream Data. In addition to that, then every single sales team from Europe and the US, in total, we are right now 8 salespeople, and including one BDR, who also reports into sales. So she's working between sales and marketing, actually mostly for the BDR. I'm excited to talk about this topic too, because for us, reporting to sales doesn't mean much, dependent is it sales or marketing who does it, but the actual line of work is very closely aligned to operations. How are we running this? And then the messaging can come from marketing and sales can help on the like the next steps. What can I do when the meeting is booked and all that? But everything else is so closely operated because you have to make sure that you're doing the things right and not just mass outbounding everybody, because things will break and neither marketing nor sales are going to be happy.
I love it. So co-founder that's CMO, a small marketing team that's product marketing, and then a couple of content writers and an outside agency, 8 sellers, and one of which is a BDR that's focused on the actual operational components. As we look at the total team, is it 12, 13 people?
Yep.
Cool. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, we're a little bit larger. For some background on the company, we're almost at 100 million ARR. Woo, I'm so excited. Woo. We're going to hit it this year, believe
it. Tell us when it's 100.
I'm excited. Let's go. So our overall team, our marketing team is about a team of 15. And we're broken up into really 2 core areas. As I mentioned, I'm director of growth marketing. And under my team is marketing ops and pretty much what I consider marketing programs, ABM, events, partner marketing, all those programs. And the other core pillar of the team is PMM. So that's all things content, web, traditional product marketing. So our team is about a size of 15. And then our field team, our SDR team sits under sales. So they are a team of, I think, 10, right at 10, including the SDR manager. And our global sales team, primarily in the US, we have a couple in EMEA that cover EMEA and APAC market, but that's a team of about 20. So overall, about almost 50.
All right. Super helpful context. Kaysen, how about you?
So our marketing and sales orgs are a little bit bigger. So in marketing, we're I think around 30, but that does not include PMM. They are an entirely separate team. Specifically, more on the demand side, we focus really on events. So for anything related to the ABM discussion, there's roughly about 2 or 3 of us. And then on the sales side, we've got give or take about 50 or so, I think, though a lot of them are really focused on expansion. Specifically, the land motion is a lot smaller on that sales side. And there is no BDRs, no SDRs.
Ooh. Immediate question would just be, that size, like it's easy for me to talk about like sales and marketing alignment because I get 2 people into a room to just talk about like the program in total. When you've got 100 people, like how does that change the dynamic as we talk about this idea around alignment and attribution?
I think it changes it in a few ways, because I think first and foremost, you've got to make sure marketing is aligned to actually what are we all doing? And then you have to align with sales separately and on top of that. So there's multiple layers to making sure we're doing what we need to do. And we all know what's in the know. And then we move it over to sales. And how do we make sure that they're enabled? We're doing the things that work. And then feedback loop is a whole other story that would take this entire podcast to talk about.
Sounds like a good podcast episode. But one thing that I want to specifically hone in on is that as an organization of your size, you're talking about like marketing to marketing alignment. So are there even attribution challenges within like who within marketing should get credit for the program and the revenue that's generated at that kind of size and scale?
Not for us specifically, but I think that is unique to our specific model where everyone's working on a very different program. I think in past orgs the same size, there's a lot of who came first. Was it the organic search? Was it the paid program? Was it the event that captured? I think in some of my past lives where I was on teams of 150 marketers, absolutely same problem.
Okay. Love it. Sarah, how about you? Like, how does that, again, 50 person team size typically change the dynamic a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I've come from larger public companies. And then right before this, a company called Full Story. So around the same size. And I think the dynamic really depends on the business and who are the leaders and what is that like alignment at that leader level and how does that break down and go to the individual contributors too. We're really fortunate to have really closely aligned leaders. That's across our marketing side, sales side, as well as our partner side. I didn't mention partners earlier, but partnerships are actually a really significant part of our business. They make up about 40-ish% of revenue. So really, really strong component of our overall go-to-market motion as well. And those 3 leaders, it's funny, when I first joined, there are marketing, sales, and partner leader consider themselves like all like part of the legs to a stool, like we're all like 30 legs to the revenue stool and stay closely aligned. It's not perfect. And I don't like, there's never no infighting as well. I know we'll get into more, but I think what's been really helpful is like we align on our attribution model from a pure revenue and pipeline perspective. There isn't really a breakout between sales and marketing. We have indirect and direct. So indirect is partner driven, and we really support that. Direct is partner and marketing and sales together. As we go up and get in the channels and all that, it gets into it. But I think even that simplicity helps create it where it's like, we're not separating out who's getting credit. It's just like, all right, these are two straws within like the funnel to get us more revenue.
Love it. Laura, are you kind of in that same camp where it's just direct or indirect? Like, how do you guys actually think about the collaboration and attribution of your revenue?
Yeah, I'm very excited to see Dream Data grow to much larger teams so I can prove myself wrong in a way that, you know, it's all kumbaya. When you're a smaller teams, like, oh, we're all talking, we all know what's happening and so on, and no finger pointing. So we are very aligned because we see the full customer journey. It's not first or last touch, where did they come from? We see the freaking full customer journey. And the only thing that we're focused on is how can we get more of that? Next challenge right now is, since we have, and we are fortunate to have a CMO who's our co-founder, we are very highly inbound driven. So far, I think 80% of our revenue is inbound, even more it used to be before. So our big focus is outbound. When the only time when we get into discussions more into like how to is either how to get more clients or how to get outbound to work better. And that's, again, an operational discussion.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that it is adhering to how prospects are buying? How do we look into signals to engage our buyers with sales to make outbound work? Even our outbound is freaking signals-based because people are looking us up and so on. So it's like, let's engage those people if they're ready to buy or ready to start a conversation. So it's not even that pure type of outbound. Seriously, I'm looking forward to see this grow because so far it seems too good to be true. But I think the whole thing of that is alignment on data. If we're aligned to what our key goal is, our leadership is aligned as well, because that's where the whip comes in. And we're saying, oh, so how come then like sales have been calling them out and they booked the meeting and the marketing can see that freaking they came from, I don't know, LinkedIn ad. And that type of thing is an imbalance because we have incentives from both teams. We want to perform well. And if we have leadership who are not aligned of how are we doing things and how are we going to get more of those clients, that's where things start to break. It's not just seeing the full customer journey.
You're perfectly teasing out the next question, which is just around everyone that I talk to still is focused on making sure they get credit or making sure that they've actually achieved their personal goals. And there's still that split of we should get this much from outbound, we should get this much from inbound, we should get this much from partner as we do our revenue modeling. And then that becomes the goals for the year. So we end up just fighting over, all right, well, who actually earned that? So Sarah, I'm curious, how have you navigated some of that conversation internally?
It's been a journey because I've been here for about a year and a half and was part of our annual planning for this upcoming year. And I think like when you mentioned credit, like that's its own whole like spiral you can go down. Are you talking about credit by team? Are you talking about credit by channel? Are you talking about credit by specific region, segment? There's so many different like aspects of that. So we really try to simplify and focus on, okay, what do we report to the board and how can we try to simplify our goal modeling as much so to be able to answer those questions, but also be able to help drive like what decisions should we make? So that's where why we have a direct and indirect, those are the core focuses for our bottoms up funneling. But from a credit perspective, one of the challenges we're facing now of like, okay, we have direct, cool, marketing, sales, we're all moving in the right direction, awesome. But to Laura's point about inbound, outbound, it's like, well, we have to create some expectations and goals around both of those because we had it. It was there before, it created infighting, we took it away, but now it's like, well, we still need to have like maybe not create comp structure as much around that or create incentives as much. That's just going to push infighting, but we still have to get visibility because we got to know where to put resources, time resources, people resources, money resources. So we're now looking at like, all right, like even within direct, what is inbound or outbound driven, and then how do we create visibility first into that and agree on, okay, this should be the expectation here, but not necessarily drive our compensation models like that yet, or team structure changes on that yet, until we are clear that, okay, here's how we can see this, here's where we're measuring it, this dashboard, this view, whatever that looks like, and then set goals specifically around that. Because it's almost like a little bit of creeping back to the dark side of breaking that out, but in a way that it's informative to the business and not going in, hey, we're all working together, which we are, but we have to have some type of, okay, like, what is each team actually accountable for? So we have resources behind it.
I'm thinking about all this a lot more as we're growing, because I'm a bootstrap business. It's all my money. So I want to make sure that I get more money for the dollars I put in. So I feel that like way more than I ever have. I've been in a sales role. We hired an AE and I built out our comp structure for the AE. So when you talk about like changing a comp structure, that gets messy quick. So I'm curious, how did you do that? Or how is that navigated? And then Laura, I kind of want you to respond, because you're a seller. Like, you make money when sales happen. How do you strike the balance with attribution and alignment, but also make sure you still get paid? So Sarah, first, how'd you guys navigate the comp changes?
We're in the middle of discussing some of that right now. But I think one lesson I've learned from in the past, or been burnt by not being in the, and again, I, with a consideration that I've looked at it usually from a perspective of, I see these afterwards, not being in the conversation and helping create that. Mm-hmm. I'm now in the position where, hey, marketing, even that's like a, just a testament to the marketing and sales alignment, having marketing in the room and talking about comp discussions and, hey, how do we look at inbound and outbound? So now in the room, understanding, like, I think one of the biggest things we're focusing on is, how do we tie it to what's actually happened? For a really clear example, we have our whole team, SDR team manages inbound, out, and outbound today. Great. If we were to move to an outbound or outbound and inbound separate structure, we need, instead of making that decision and giving new goals, we need to look at what is the composition of their current portfolio, what percentage is inbound versus outbound. If we were to put that on there today, how do we change that? Is it a payout difference? Is it a goal volume difference? And like taking that into account and creating a level of like visibility at the time of the change and clear change management within the team. I think that's one of the core things I think is a struggle, because I'd love to hear, Laura, your perspective on this too, because I feel like as a seller, anyone who's going to be impacted by comp changes, yeah, that's difficult. And it creates like anxiety and frustration and like the why. So I feel like it's leadership's job to communicate as much so as possible. Here is the why. Here's how this has been thought of. Here's like why this is still attainable, because we've actually done the work to look at what's happened before.
Exactly. I agree. It has to be very clearly communicated. And I remember, I think it was John Barrows who made the whole big webinar about most of the sellers not even understanding their comp plans. You're on it, you freaking don't get it. It's like what it is made of, there are small bits and pieces, and I've been in those places too, especially when there are renewals added and whatnot. So for us so far, as simple as possible, you get a percentage of the closed deal for the yearly first year's contract. If it's 2 years, then there's an additional bonus for that. And do not bonus our BDR. She is on a flat salary, and we are just all wanting her to succeed, to start with, really to succeed. It is a thing. So to start with, since there is no clear process of how to do it, you can't just hire superstars and expect them to perform very well. It is an operational thing. Again, when kicking off proper outbound, it is an operational project. It is not much to do with sales. You can hire a superstar BDR, but then later when you want to scale it, you don't have the clear process of how we're going to do this. It's great. You got some additional right now, but what are we going to do long term? So it has to be an operational project, and then you can look into comp plans. And the way I think it should be happening is that we have to, for any ICP booking, a BDR has to have a percentage for it. As soon as we have a team and we see the process working, then this is the playbook. You can go out creative out of the playbook if you're better at booking meetings in some different way, but this is the playbook that works. And booking those meetings with ideal customer profiles, that's it. this is your compensation, as easy as possible. And we don't compensate marketing for revenue targets. They have goals, they do, but it's not on a compensation plan. So we have clients who have tried setting marketing into a compensation plan. It's rough. If I was to suggest, don't do it.
Because attribution, right?
Even having clear customer journeys in place, it's hard, it's freaking hard, and it will just create friction. You'd rather align them with overall goals and get that working. One final thing, what we also tried out and doesn't work either, so don't do it, is team goals. We said, okay, so we have two teams, Europe and US, and then everybody's on the same goal. If the team closes the target, this is what everybody's paid out on everybody's deals. And we thought, oh, so a lot of collaborations, because then people are technical, they would join each other's call and support each other and book those meetings together. Don't do that. So personal plans, very good, because everybody's aimed to closing their own deals, but then you also have to foster the culture of helping each other. That's what makes it all work. You see the clear attribution data, great. Your compensation plan is for the sale that you close, and all the rest of the collaboration is the team collaboration that is the culture of the company as well.
So what I'm hearing is, Sarah, you guys are in the process of mapping out a new comp structure that is not dependent on source.
Yeah, I think on our side, it won't necessarily be, it's not necessarily whether it's just closed one or not. It's more of, hey, like, was this inbound or outbound for specifically the SDR comp structure? Our AE comp structure, that's pretty standard. We have that, it's very similar to what you said, Laura, on like the percentage, but our SDR piece, because there's a much higher emphasis at that aspect of our funnel right now. And how are we getting net new in? And even potentially like, hey, can SDRs help with customer on the side of the house? Can SDRs help with expansion? Like, where do we like utilize this team in new ways to drive value?
Kason, you've been shaking your head yes a lot. So I'm curious, how are you not, like, because you're at a larger scale at this point. So how are you guys thinking through these things around compensation?
So I won't lie, I am not in those conversations here, so I can't speak to that. But I think one thing that was coming to my mind from a past life is more even in a previous life, we noticed IRT, initial response time, really had a huge, it was almost the biggest factor to if a lead converted to a closed one, more than were they ICP or not. Really more than where they came in, channel, anything. It was IRT. And so actually our SDRs were comped based on their percentage of leads that they followed up on within that IRT, because we knew that's what hit down funnel. And so I think that's where, Laura, I think you mentioned it, but it's all about the data and the alignment. That was our most important success metric. And so we comped them on that instead of necessarily like how many they got or anything there. Because also how many they got, well, that kind of came back to marketing, because they were inbound focused. So marketing had goals around how many you got. So it was more, what can you contribute to ultimately get the company to revenue while keeping it, yes, to everyone's point, like as simple as possible. And really what matters in, like, if you think back to circle of control, circle of influence, marketing can only kind of influence closed one. Yes, we can bring in leads, but for the like SDRs, they can definitely influence if they get to those leads in the right amount of time. Though, yes, it is also an operations piece. If the systems are broken or down, well, we had to get creative at those times. But
I think that's just super helpful, because you're focusing on what they can actually control. Mm-hmm. And as I just think about compensation, the whole goal of compensation is just to incentivize right behaviors. So if you want your organization to be aligned, if compensation fundamentally misaligns the teams because it creates infighting, really tough. If compensation is based on the right behaviors that we all know we want our organization to exude, it's hard to mess that up. So I think that's helpful. So let's try to incentivize marketers, figure out how they're compensated. Because if they do ABM and then marketing gets credit for sourcing the deal, they may actually not be making more money, at which point you've got an alignment issue that mm-hmm. needs to be solved at a leadership level. I've seen that a couple times in the past year or so. Anyway, I am curious. There is a lot of work that is worth doing that doesn't get noticed often. So I'm curious, and Laura, I'm going to come to you first. Like, what do you do and how do you effectively communicate the value of something when it's not as apparent through some form of attribution.
So what type of work do you think marketing would be doing that is not in attribution? What are you thinking about? Like podcasts, posting on LinkedIn?
Podcasts, LinkedIn, social, oftentimes events. Events don't get great attribution. So those are things that, like, for context, everything you just outlined is exactly how I've personally grown my business is events, podcasting, and LinkedIn. So like, I like it, but like
a lot of people don't.
You have a gut feeling that works or not, even for large companies. So we spoke with Casey from Sendoso just recently, and they're a perfect example for this because they run a lot with a gut feeling, but that is blended in with data anyway. So for example, their founders are posting on LinkedIn, even their sellers are posting on LinkedIn. And how do we know this works? People do mention that. At the beginning, we feel that our buyers are there, they will be listening to it. And that helps me as a seller to sell better. And that helps me as a marketer to reach my audience for cheaper money and always be on top of mind of people so I don't have to bug them with various emails and stuff like that. So you've got your gut feeling and it works. In addition to that, there is data to map. There are guidelines for you to map that type of data. Either that's LinkedIn impressions mapped out for organic or for paid. And it's not perfect, but it gives you the guidelines to understand. Even your direct traffic can be the guidance for it too. That would tell you, oh, we did a specific experiment or a post on LinkedIn or a specific LinkedIn live. Then we can see an influx of direct traffic coming in, which we have no freaking idea where does it come from. But my gut tells me this was this specific live webinar that did that influx of inbounds. And ask your clients. You don't have to do all those forms about like, where have you heard about us from? People will have heard about you from, I don't know, a friend or internet. That's not great. But when you have them in a conversation, then it's so much easier to understand and then use your guts for it. And I know this is a scary slope for larger companies. It's like, how do we freaking figure out what's actually working? And they're saying that LinkedIn is working, but they're just sitting and scrolling on LinkedIn. Then you have to find some of those anecdotal stories as well to be able to follow it. And if something is working, especially nowadays, when there's so much noise in the data, you have to find patterns to be able to drive those decisions. And sometimes you got to test it for a bit of a longer time. So long tail explanation, but map out the full data, track your website, and ask your clients where have they usually heard about you from. That will be so much easier for you to trust your guts after that because you will have some stories.
Couldn't agree more. I also have worked with a couple of $1 billion clients where they're like really struggling with that. So I'm curious, Kaysen, like, as you're obviously a larger organization, like, how do you guys actually functionally do that in a way that is getting everyone aligned across the team of, yeah, that's the right path ahead, even though it's like it's data backed, but it's also like some gut feeling. Like, how do you communicate and find those insights?
Yeah, I think it's at least starting with the data to a degree, where like, because of these things, and Laura, to your point, like, we know we did a LinkedIn Live the day before this spike, so these correlate. The data won't show that, but the spike correlates with the date. So you can kind of add your, we think this correlated. But I think it's to that point more specifically, like, how do you use UTMs as much as possible, wherever possible, but then asking and then getting those captured in your CRM or your Salesforce as specifically as possible without vaguely. And I say that, like, one that comes up a lot, especially with the rise of Slack communities, a lot of people just post in there. And so it's offline. UTMs don't really work. You're not going to mention it. They may say a name, they may say Slack. But if you have those more standardized as a drop down, was it a Slack community? Was it a personal referral? Whatever, or maybe notes. I think those are good ways to really figure out, like, okay, we talked about it in this webinar, but then someone mentioned it in Slack. It came through this way. And that's how you can start to standardize it. But I think a lot of it is with that gut and kind of using as many data sources. I think I'm a data nerd, so I'll layer in, like, what am I seeing in our ABM tool versus what is Salesforce telling me versus what is HubSpot telling me, but what is GA telling me? And then between all of those, I'm like, okay, here's what the data is pointing to. Though when I look at campaign responses, this is what we're seeing. So I can tell you, like, this doesn't work, this does. Some of it's data backed, but some of it's not. But I think that's where I'm saying, like, lean on data first to paint that story.
Sarah, anything to add on that?
It's funny. Laura, you mentioned like the how'd you hear about us, like that be like, you know, like being able to ask, like we do a little bit of both. So like we actually, like we introduced or added in the how'd you hear about us as an open form, but required field on our hand raiser forms, demo, contact us. Cause it's like, it look, and we haven't, we didn't see a drop in conversion rate. I don't, like that's one piece, like whoever out there says that, maybe like your data shows it, but I'm like, people are already ready to buy or they're ready to talk. Like, they're going to answer one more question. Like, they're, that's not going to be like, oh, you're asking me that. So, but we asked that and we're still trying to figure out how to, like, I know there's lots of different ways you can codify that and add it in as a different, you know, like let's map these values, but we're just doing it more with our gut a little bit right now and looking at that data on a quarterly basis. Between that, listening to calls, listening like to gong calls, what people are saying, flagging, like when we hear sources and things like that, and tie it back to like what we believe is working. Like, it's funny. I feel like personally over the past maybe year, it's like, I don't know if I'm at like a midlife marketing crisis, but I'm like all the stuff that that like we talk about in marketing, like all the, you know, acronyms and all these things. I'm like, wait, marketing, like at the end of the day, we're supposed to like just create a good experience. We get people in, we create a good experience. So I'm like, enough of the BS stuff. Like, let's just like focus on like, what do we think is actually going to, like, do we know our audience? We know our audience. Like, I hate webinars. I'm not a webinar person. Our audience loves them. I do a lot of LinkedIn. Some of our audience does. Mostly our executive team, not people who are usually our decision makers. So it's like being able to like understand our audience, listening to our gut a little bit, and identify, like, it's not scalable right now, but identify like moments and patterns, as you mentioned, like of like, hey, look, these three executives mentioned this. Mm-hmm. Here are some example, like we're now seeing more people mention AI in our how'd you hear about us? And it's like, okay, we're putting effort toward LLM optimization. Let's put more effort there. So I think that's a long-winded answer of like, it's not perfect. Yes, we use our typical UTMs and like that guides a lot of our performance-based budget, but we're purposely and intentionally putting budget behind things that don't typically get that type of attribution that would drive more direct traffic, because we're verifying in qualitative ways that it's making a difference with our audience. Like, our audience likes that stuff.
Laura, you had a thought.
In addition to this, I love trying to listen to gong calls. We have set up triggers as well that if this is mentioned, then you can review those snippets of calls as well. This is amazing. Another thing that we taught our sales team to do is we have a Slack channel that is called Customer Love. And it can be prospect love, customer love, doesn't matter. And usually it is somebody who says how much they love the product, the CS and so on. But we also post stuff that they have heard about us on this specific webinar. And we tell, oh, our product marketer was at that webinar and somebody who came in inbound, they said that the reason they came in was due to that. So then we are aware that these are those anecdotal stories. Plus, then we can scale it because people remember it. As you're saying, Sarah, it has to be a good experience. And if they had a good experience during the webinar, listening to that specific person there, even though it was not ours, then we're able to see that being in others' webinars also makes a difference. So you can scale that too. But Mason, seems like we're a little bit too aligned on this one. It's nobody's fault.
Well, this might kick a hornet's nest. I think that, Sarah, you made the point earlier, like, midlife marketing crisis of, you know, what are we doing here? It's all a bunch of jargon. The company named Scrappy Marketing didn't have the same ring as like Scrappy ABM. But I think B2B marketing is just ABM. Like, I think ABM is just like very good targeted approaches to marketing. And I'm just curious, like, Laura, as you thought about B2B programs, specifically coming from a seller's perspective, like, do you agree? Like, just ABM is good B2B marketing?
No.
Interesting.
So for ABM to work, you have to define what are the accounts that you want to go for. You have to define your ICP to the perfection so it works. So everybody knows what's in, what's out. Good marketing might be we're speaking with clients that are not ready to buy, not the size that we want to go after, and not those specific, I don't know, buyer personas, whatever that is. So you have to really niche in. And as soon as you niche in, you know who is not a part of your ABM. Because you can definitely do good marketing and be appealing to, for example, for Dream Data, we can be appealing for agencies. Great. But we don't sell to agencies. We sell to direct consumers of revenue attribution platforms for marketers that are in B2B SaaS. So agencies would be out of this. So if we were doing ABM, we got to exactly know who we're going after. So, which makes it much easier for a marketer to define it, create audiences, and market towards those. Plus, it helps sales. Because if I get an inbound from a company that is not my target, that is not a part of ABM, then I'm not going to maybe even speak with them because it doesn't make sense. Because from the data, we also know those do not convert. Those do not close into new business. That comes from all of the data that you got around your customer journeys. So for me, good ABM is very well-defined ideal customer profile marketing. For some companies, though, it is a list of accounts because their ICP is so niche that we know all 200 companies that we are going to sell to forever and are not going to change this. Then it is a very targeted ABM. It's not good marketing. It's a very targeted list, and then you do good marketing on it.
I have many thoughts before I share. Kason, do you guys have anything to rebuttal there?
Yeah, a little bit. I have a few. Some I agree on, some I don't. I think to me, that's the difference in like one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many as well. But I also think you can have ABM and demand gen at the same company, especially depending on some of the things you said, Laura, on who they would work, who sales would work and what they would define as a good lead. If there is a targeted or named agreed upon specific list, you need to be doing ABM there too. I'm not saying you can't do targeted demand gen. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But I also think, especially on more the ABM side, half of the time the way you measure and like, depending on what we were talking about earlier, comp structures, they may not come in as a lead or an MQL. They may skip ahead some steps and be all out of order. Or you may already have an opportunity and then, you know, some decision maker comes in. Are they really an MQL or is that just part of the buying committee? So I think measurement has a different place with ABM versus targeted demand. Mm-hmm. But I think they can be at the same company, but it also depends on the business model, if it's ABM or if it's good demand gen.
If it would have been 2 years ago, I would be like, yes, 100%. Yes, good ABM is marketing. I would agree with you, I think, Mason. But I'm not quite, I don't think, at where, Laura, where you're at, because I hate to say like it depends, but being so close now within like two sales, as well as it's really interesting at like in my role now, this is my first role where I've had both like kind of a hat of like executing marketing, but also like sitting on an executive LT team. So it's like you have to change hats of like, okay, well, what do we think about the business and what's different with the business? And I think the role of marketing really depends on the business. And then within B2B, like that aspect of ABM, it depends on the business. Like a good ABM could be good marketing. Good marketing could have nothing at all to do with ABM, I think sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because like, is the brand well-known? Are you going after companies that are really small versus really big? So I think that like, I think the, what good marketing is very dependent. It's like, only is going to be very different from business to business. So like where we're at right now, like, I'm actually trying to remove the term ABM internally because it's created triggers for our sales mm-hmm. team in the past. And like Mason, your post this morning, I was like, yes, like exactly. Like we talk more about signals and intent, but that aspect of we have an ABM motion with our target ICP accounts for a specific part of our, like for a few segments, mid-market and enterprise. We have some targeted efforts, but we're a really interesting business in that, like, while we have higher conversion rates and higher win rates and faster velocity with certain types of businesses, we actually sell across the board. Like, we sell into like 14 or 15 different industries, all different company sizes. So we have to focus in our effort. I think good marketing is understanding where do you focus the majority of your resources, but understand if there's additional resources that you have to continue to create, like actually create mind share in the market. I don't even want to say demand. It's just like mind share in the market so people know who you are.
Yeah. I think another difference is you can have good marketing and it's just demand gen, but good ABM is when sales is at the table with you.
Mm. Yeah.
And we haven't mentioned that. We just talked about like the marketing side, but ABM, the difference there is like sales is a partner at the table. And it also doesn't stop at insert whatever stage, MQL, SQL, whatever, but you continue until that's closed. And then even potentially like renewal upsell.
I love this because you know what people are saying, that ABM is actually a sales thing. So sales always work out of lists. Sales always have been doing ABM, but now marketing took it over to help out sales. And if marketing takes it away and just do their own thing without sales, then it's kind of, well, we created this baby. Come on, let's work together to get this finished.
It's like, you need us.
Yeah, exactly. We can run with this. Oh, I love it. This is a very good point.
Ugh, we're aligned again.
Exactly. Come on.
You lied trying. And you said you were going to start the morning.
Trying here. So I want to clarify a couple of things because, Laura, you said good marketing could attract people that are not the ICP. Like, you could do good marketing, but it attracts agencies. So like, from my perspective, I don't like, is that good marketing if it attracts the wrong audience versus calling out the audience specifically? And then also, I just in general think that we did the wrong thing in the first place by having siloed organizations. So from my perspective, having sales involved makes it also good marketing. So I think we're all saying the same thing, but you know, nuance. It's always a challenge. So I actually think there's a separate conversation that I'll bring you back after I've had a kid in like November to do this, but deeper on this specific topic, because I want to dig into, it's funny because what's like, there were slight disagreements here and there, but then we landed it. I actually think we're all generally on the same page. And I think this happens often in internal conversations, trying to build new programs. But sometimes you don't end on the same page. Like, you actually all communicated the same thing using different words and language, and then think you're misaligned. And then you're actually trying to all do the same thing. So I'm curious, Kaysen, as you think about this attribution and alignment conversation with internal stakeholders at a leadership level, like, how do you handle when conflict arises around these different topics?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's, we're saying the same thing with different words. So I think that's where one, like, at the data perspective, are we looking at the same dashboards? Or when we say lead, are we talking about the same thing? Like, do we have the same fundamental definitions? And are we using the same terminology? And so I think once you establish those baselines, you can kind of move forward. But I think a lot of times, even going back to basics, that sounds really rudimentary, but just, what do you think I just said? And like, ask everyone to say the same kind of thing. And like, what are you getting out of this? Especially when it comes to next steps or our plan, having everyone say it in their own words and really digging into like, hold on, wait, what do you mean by that one?
I think the restating is so valuable. Mine are going to be a little bit tactical. I think restating and making sure it's a recorded call, making sure, like, just being straight up, like that being a recorded call and having that then documented somewhere, like wherever, even if it's simple, like read, like, oh, an email was sent out after, or a quick Slack message of like, hey, here's what we talked about. Like, it ideal state is there's clear, really strong documentation across everything that's happening. But I mean, I haven't seen the most amazing documentation ever anywhere. So it's like, at least if we like are over communicating it in the channels that most of those stakeholders are in, like, for example, like our CEO doesn't really use Slack that much. So knowing like, hey, if he is a key stakeholder in a decision, or we need alignment on here, like, let's make sure that's an email. So that stakeholder is also clear. The other key piece, or like my kind of hack when it comes to alignment across teams is visuals. It's like Miro board is my best friend. I feel like words can have different meanings depending on the team, but a visual for some reason just seems to get people, both even including myself, like you have to really think when you map out something and when you show a visual and then getting everyone aligned, like this is how we all think this operates, we agree on. So those type of visuals, whether it's in Miro board and in a slide deck, whatever it may be, but like having a visual of like, here's what we're saying creates a sales accepted leads. Here are all the checkpoints before that. So having that view that people can go back to and say like, hey, we agreed upon this in this call that we recorded. Here's the recording.
Laura, what are your thoughts on how to defuse some of these conversations when they get tense?
Data speaks. So for us, again, we're very fortunate. We've got the full customer journey understanding from the very beginning, LinkedIn impressions mapped to like MQLs. You can see, oh, freaking marketing has been targeting them for 3 months and they finally came in because of the phone call from sales. Nah. So kind of seems like they have seen some ads as well. And then it's lesser of a fight because we want to target signals by sales. And it's easy to see that there have been touches happening before that phone call happened. That's the reason why we called. That's why we're aligned on all this ABM. So, and further going, that it's much easier to get this sorted out. But again, we're fortunate and we're still small enough to have that figured out together in order to work on the things that are working and double down on them to get even more and not invest time or money into the things that are not working.
I'm also going to give three really tactical things because for quick context, these conflicts are what I get to do for a living across like 20 organizations. Super fun. A glossary of terms. So like, what is the difference between a campaign, a program, and a playbook? And depending on who you ask, those are all the same thing or radically different things. So glossaries of terms are really, really important. And then just being able to like make those easily accessible and sharing a screen and saying, hey, when I use these words, this is what this means. We already talked about strategy visualization. So I was actually going to call the client yesterday morning, and they started to talk through a bunch of things. And I actually just started to live build a visual. And he was like, hey, what are you doing on the side? And I was like, hey, just give you, like, I shared my screen real quick. And I said, I'm live building the program you're talking about to make sure that I understand the connecting points that you're trying to accomplish. Massively helpful. You can get Lucid Charter Mural or Miro board for like $20 a month. And it has saved a career. It's not expensive. And the last thing is anytime I'm on a meeting, yes, we have a Fathom recorder every time. I also type notes. And I actually read my notes back at the end of the call to make sure that I understood it correctly. And I said, perfect. I've also got this in an email that I'm going to send everybody right now. And if you do those three things, that dramatically helps diffuse a lot of conflict. And then sales, just I think every marketer should have a stint in sales in general because of the ability to learn active listening through like a Rocky training cutscene. Like Rocky's training cutscene was like 3 minutes. I'm stealing this very blatantly from Alex Hormozi, but like the Rocky training cutscene is like 3 years in the making. So like if you learn active listening, even though it might be 2 to 3 years of your career and you can do it as like a cutscene type moment of like where you learn a lot of skills. I have used active listening in every conversation ever to just say, this is what I hear. I think I'm hearing. Is that right? And somebody will say yes. And if they say no, amazing. Like, let's talk about it versus just hearing somebody say something and saying, oh yeah, totally. Cause I don't know what they said sometimes. Like, and I think I used to be afraid earlier in my career to look like an idiot, but like I've now learned everyone made up all these terms. None of them are real. No one knows what they're talking about unless we define our terms. And if we define our terms, then we can actually know what we're talking about. So that's my little soapbox because I've learned the hard way over 2 years of doing this that like if you don't do those three things, people are like, I didn't say that. It's like, rough. So last thing, and we're going to do rapid fire, 1 minute per person. There were a couple of things we didn't get to cover because I may have been long-winded on some of my questions, so forgive me. But I'm curious as we land the plane on this, like what's one tip that someone could take away as they think about using this information to go have conversations internally? So, Casey, I'm going to start with you. What's one thing that somebody could take away from this or something you wish we had gotten to cover that's a really highly tactical tip?
Make sure you're talking across the aisle. And I don't just mean that talking across the aisle, but actually having conversations. So like, are you sitting down not only with sales leadership or operations or rev ops leadership, but are you sitting down with the people in the weeds and like, what is working for you? What is a pain point? What do you love that marketing's doing? What do you hate that we're doing or you're not getting from us that you need? But like really having those kind of one-on-ones where they can say anything and you're like, I promise I won't be offended. One, I've gotten a lot of actionable takeaways from those conversations, but it's also helped build a lot of trust across the aisle. So I think that's probably one I would have loved us to talk about.
Love it. Be for the follow-up in November.
Sarah.
Oh, I want to plus. Dang it, Kaysen, you took mine. I have a one-on-one with an SDR in 3 minutes. So like that, yes, like literally that exact thing. Like understand what's happening in the field. If there were one other tactical piece, and I actually want to add on to that piece of like, one of the things you just mentioned, Mason, I think that's almost like a crux of all this. Like we talk about attribution alignment. Yes, the data and like the systems and the dashboard and stuff are important, but like the relationships supersede a lot of that. Like, I think that's like really, really important because like, if you build trust with whoever your stakeholder is, like, you're going to figure that stuff out together. Like there's going to likely be infighting and frustration, but like, you're going to figure that out. So I feel like if like my one tie-in is like to build in trust, and part of that, that like has been my hack of doing that with sales teams is really listening and understanding one specific thing that could be an easy win for marketing to solve and go solve that. Even if it's not on your top OKRs, even if it's not like your top priority, like find one small thing. Like if they're saying like, oh yeah, we want to do more in this industry, want to like just something small to create like, hey, look, I'm extending an olive branch. Let me put some resources behind this and show like, I'm not a marketer who's just all talk. I'm in a GSD and it's going to make impact. I think that does wonders to create like, okay, there's some trust. This person has some skin in the game. Let's like, honestly, like start listening what they're talking about too.
I love it. Laura, round us out.
I do agree on alignment and all that type of data. It's nice. It's good to have. I agree what you guys are saying. Sorry, I won't be able to add like one specific tip, but when hiring, when there are meetings, sales have to be at the table for marketing and marketing has to be at the table for sales. So when you're hiring a CMO, make sure that your head of sales is a part of the conversation. If they cannot get along, freaking rough. The other way around goes exactly the same. When they care about each other as people, you don't have to be best friends, but when you care and respect each other's job, it gets so much easier to get an alignment. We'll get the data. We'll get everything else because we know all the tips and tricks in the books, but the human aspect, that's what people care about.
Thank you all so much for being here. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.